This episode is brought to you by Elm Coffee Roasters. Open in Pioneer Square and South Lake Union for takeout and soon indoor seating. Order coffee and more at elmcoffeeroasters.com.
Hey, you are listening to Daily Discoveries, and this is Oscar.
And this is Sanjana. This is the podcast where we discuss scientific articles weekly from the science section of the Daily. In this episode, we're talking about the article, Genetically Modified Plants May Be the Key to Stopping Air Pollution, written by Taylor Bruce. This article talks about how UW researchers genetically engineered a plant that can solve the issue of air pollution by taking in chloroform and benzene from the air. According to UW News, chloroform and benzene are both air pollutants that can be found in our own homes, as chloroform is found in chlorinated water and benzene can be found in homes when we shower and boil water, since it is in gasoline. Both chloroform and benzene have been associated with cancer if exposed. The researchers conducted their experiment on a pothos ivy plant, which is a popular houseplant, and would genetically modify the plant to express proteins named cytochrome P450-2E1, which would allow the plant to intake benzene and chloroform in the air and turn it into sustenance that would help the plant grow. The researchers used the protein cytochrome P450-2E1 because it is in all mammals, including humans, and in humans, it turns benzene into phenol and chloroform into carbon dioxide. However, it only comes into effect when we drink alcohol since it's in the liver, so we cannot use it continually to clean the air we breathe in. This protein would work well with plants too, since plants can use phenol to create their cell walls, and carbon dioxide can be used in photosynthesis. For their experiment, the researchers created a synthetic gene that would provide the information to create the 2E1 protein found in rabbits. Then they made sure that each cell in the pothos ivy plant would have this gene. They placed the modified plant and the normal pothos ivy plant, which would serve as their control, in glass tubes, and added either benzene or chloroform gas to the tubes. They added much higher concentrations of benzene and chloroform to the tubes than what would be found in normal households in order to make the changes measured more noticeable. They tracked the concentrations of benzene and chloroform in the tubes for 11 days and found that the modified plants caused the concentration of benzene to decrease by 75% by the 8th day, while the chloroform concentration decreased more quickly, decreasing by 82% by the 3rd day, and it was hard to detect by the 6th day. The unmodified plants did not have changes in the concentrations of the pollutants over time. Since this experiment used high concentrations of pollutants, it is expected that in households, the concentration of pollutants would decrease more quickly over time. For the future, the researchers are working on modifying plants so they can intake another pollutant called formaldehyde, which is found in some products made of wood and in tobacco smoke. They would like to increase the extent of these plants due to the negative effects of poor air quality on mental health.
Well, that's very interesting. This all comes from that genetically modified organisms or genetically modified plants all have been used for a while now, especially, as we all know it, to help us grow food in different ways, such as increasing crop yield, decreasing the need for pesticides, reduced costs of food production, enhancing nutritional value of food, resistance to pests, and helping feed large populations. So, do you think that we can use genetically modified organisms to tackle other challenges that we are now facing as a society, such as climate change or pandemics?
Oh yeah, it's waxworms eat plastic.
So you think waxworms could be something that could tackle something like pollution in the oceans and stuff like that?
I don't know, but it says that their bodies dissolve the plastic and they have like a specific enzyme that allows them to do that. So I was wondering if we could use like genetic engineering to find a way to like use that enzyme in like something else, like how they did with like something like that. Like, you know how they took the protein from humans and they put it in plants? I wonder if we could take like that enzyme and put it into like something else.
Like a larger animal that would be able to eat trash at larger amounts than this tiny little worm. Genetically modified organisms at first were used to help feed a growing population throughout the 1900s. And then now that we are facing problems such as climate change, pandemics, pollution, all that stuff. Can we use genetically modified organisms to tackle these problems? So obviously a very relevant topic these days is climate change and the amount of carbon dioxide we are emitting. So unfortunately, it is not enough for us to just stop emitting CO2 at this point. We have actually emitted so much carbon dioxide that we will have to find a strategy that will allow us to collect carbon dioxide that we have polluted our atmosphere with if we want to keep the global temperature from rising too high. This is what researchers from the US and Israel have thought about, and they have come together to engineer a plant whose goal would be to be able to capture carbon dioxide from the atmosphere more efficiently than your regular plant. Obviously, trees and plants, they use carbon dioxide from the atmosphere to produce food for themselves and release oxygen through photosynthesis. However, these plants, once they die or decompose or burn or whatever, they release this carbon that they have collected back into the atmosphere. So the goal for this group is to modify these plants so that they will be both sustainable and the perfect carbon capturing plant that we can use to extract carbon from the atmosphere. So the first modification that was discussed was that they would change the root to shoot ratio of the plant so that the plant would be able to store more carbon in the soil in its roots rather than storing a lot of its carbon in the structure of the plant, such as the stem, leaves, and such. Another modification that they discussed was increasing the sustainability of the plant, such as increasing drought resistance and increasing the ability to create energy using less sunlight through photosynthesis. It's important for these plants to stay alive in order to be sustainable because, as mentioned earlier, when they rot and decompose, they will release the carbon dioxide that they captured. Another fascinating modification that I thought was really cool is a modification that allows the plant to fixate nitrogen from the atmosphere rather than having to rely on nitrogen being available to them in the soil that they can use for plant growth. This is a very new technology and they haven't actually found a way to do this. And the only plants that can currently do this with the help of bacteria are legumes, which use nitrogen-fixing bacteria, which extract nitrogen from the atmosphere and make it available for these plants. So something they mentioned was that if we could somehow make this happen, then we could make plants such as corn and other plants that we grow at large amounts use this or have this genetic modification so that they can all extract nitrogen from the atmosphere to help them grow faster, making them more sustainable in the end. And then another idea is to instead genetically engineer bacteria to use carbon dioxide as an energy source rather than sugar, which could be a very space-saving way to capture carbon. However, when this idea was presented in a symposium held in Boston, there were many skeptics that mentioned the consequences this could have on the carbon cycle, where small perturbations to the carbon cycle could have large-scale effects on the whole planet, as we are seeing today with global warming. Once again, a word from our sponsors. Open since 2015, Elm Coffee Roasters is devoted to high-quality coffee that's easy to brew at home and enjoy to drink. At our roastery and cafe in Pioneer Square, Seattle, Elm obsessively roasts small batches of coffee that they source with a focus on sustainable practices that lift up the whole supply chain and protect the future of the coffee plant. Elm's goal is to make a truly exceptional cup of coffee and an experience you look forward to every day. Cafes in Pioneer Square and South Lake Union open now for takeout and soon dine-in service. Please use code PODCAST at elmcoffeeroasters.com for 15% off your next coffee order.
As many of us know, air pollution is a large problem we have discussed in a previous episode about wildfires. According to the World Health Organization, 7 million people die each year due to air pollution worldwide. Also, 99% of the population breathes in air that contains high levels of pollutants and exceeds the guidelines set by the World Health Organization. Outdoor and household air pollution can result in stroke, heart disease, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, lung cancer, and acute respiratory infections. Some common air pollutants are carbon monoxide, lead, nitrogen oxides, ozone, particulate matter, and sulfur dioxide. So what can we do to combat air pollution?
Well, one way that scientists are trying to combat the issue of us releasing way too much carbon dioxide into the atmosphere over the past couple hundred years is to use a technique called carbon capture. Now, this is kind of similar to what I mentioned earlier with the genetically modified plants. However, this is using machines. So I found information from the New York Times that very recently there is a machine in Iceland which has just started running, and it's called the Orca. And it is the world's biggest direct air capture device. Just this September, this machine was installed and is pulling CO2 out of the atmosphere. The site at which it's located is about 20 miles outside of Reykjavik. This large machine, like most of Iceland, is powered by renewable geothermal energy. And the CO2 is captured by the machine by bonding chemically with a sand-like filtering substance in these large container-like filters. They're like these large shipping container-sized filters. And when this CO2 is then heated and released from the filter, it is then collected by another company called CarbFix. Now, this company collects the carbon dioxide in two ways. One way is very creative. It actually uses this carbon dioxide that it just collected from the atmosphere to produce a drinkable fizzy water, which I think is really cool, really amazing, and really creative. However, not all of the carbon dioxide is used for making fizzy water, because that would be a lot of fizzy water. So the rest of the carbon dioxide is shot down into the ground a couple hundred meters down, and it reacts with basalts down there. And over 2 to 3 years, it forms rocks. Now, what is amazing about this is that this is a permanent solution to capturing carbon and then storing it somewhere where it won't be released back into the atmosphere again. And it basically is just captured and removed from the atmosphere, and it will not be emitted back into the atmosphere for a long time. However, compared to planting trees, which ultimately is have the risk of being cut down, rotting, or burning in a forest fire, which would then release all the carbon dioxide that they have captured back into the atmosphere. Now, this technology is great, but currently this machine only removes 4,000 tons of carbon dioxide every year, which is equivalent to what humans emit in 3 seconds every year. So it is not nearly enough, but it does show that carbon capture is not just fiction anymore. Okay, that's all from us today. Thank you for listening to Daily Discoveries.